Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, October 6th, 2022. City Council passes 2022-23 budget and tax rate, raises short-term rental registration fees. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa, last week, City Council approved the 2022-23 fiscal budget and proposed tax rate, bringing the process to an end after a series of meetings and workshops. Council also discussed registration fees for short-term rentals, STRs, and how the city might better regulate them in the future. All council members were present for the meeting, which was well attended by local residents, though none spoke during the citizen comment periods or public hearings regarding the budget, tax rate, or any other agenda items. Budget and tax rate. The conclusion of a previous budget-focused meeting in late September saw council members arrive at a budget with a $30,000 deficit after making cuts to the city administration and water departments, among other changes. Last week, council members were able to close that $30,000 gap and approve a mostly balanced budget. The new budget, which will be uploaded onto the city's website soon, allocated for a 3% raise for the city's hourly employees and involved increasing short-term rental, STR, registration fees for the first time since 2018 from a flat fee of $150 to $500, with each unit costing an additional $100. STR fees will need to be renewed annually, but will now have deadlines as opposed to the previous rolling registration model. Monthly gas meter fees were also bumped up to the base rate of $16 a month, up from $10 a month, in order to combat the fact that the city is now paying over double its previous rate per MMBTU, an energy unit, for natural gas. Council members also factored into the budget the water and wastewater survey results they recently received, opting to raise rates by 8% for the first 5 years and lower to a 3% increase over time. Funds from the rate increases will go toward water and wastewater infrastructure projects and include annual funds for vehicles and equipment. An option to determine rates based on meter size is still on the table, with city employees to assess meters in town to find out more about what sizes exist. At Council's next meeting on October 11th, the governing body will review two ordinances relating to increasing water, sewer, and gas rates for city customers. They will have to approve and adopt those ordinances before city utility customers see new rates reflected in their monthly bills. The Big Bend Sentinel will provide coverage of the October 11th meeting. Streets, along with utilities, were another priority this budget cycle. The city will spend its 2022 tax note, a $2.95 million loan to be spent within 3 years and paid off in seven, primarily on streets, allocating $2 million to street repairs targeting Russell and Mesa, along with a handful of other city far-gone thoroughfares. Streets have always been a priority in Marfa, and it seems like we just keep passing the buck. This is something we need to tackle now that we do have funds, said Mayor Manny Baeza. The city will also spend an additional $375,000 worth of tax note funds on a new groundwater storage tank, for which construction has been delayed, but is slated to begin in November. With that, the city will be left with a remaining $300,000 to $400,000 in tax note funds. the topic of seeing the Marfa Volunteer Fire Department's expansion project come to fruition, which was still not fully funded despite having received $224,000 in American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, funds from the county, was also addressed in the city's final budget meeting. The city had an existing $147,500 budgeted for the project, carried over from previous years, but the fire department still needed $87,000 to get the work done. It's our building, it's volunteer work, it's embarrassing not to be able to do this. But hey, if we have a workaround, I'm with you 100%, said Councilmember Eddie Payares. In the end, the council opted to have the fire department pay for the remaining project balance with their savings, with the city to pay them back later with interest in order to see the project realized. Council voted unanimously to pass the amended budget. Later, in his mayor's report, Baez thanked council members for meeting throughout the month of September to finalize the budget. We made some tough choices, but in the end, I think we all had to have the same goal in mind of just bettering our community and making difficult changes that are not going to be too extreme on the residents, said Baez. Council then swiftly approved the proposed 2022-23 tax rate of $0.371 per $100 taxable value, a 2.35% increase from the previous year. Increased registration fees for short-term rentals. Councilmember Jason Ballman led a discussion of STR rules and regulations, stating that Marfa's lack of affordable housing was, quote, on the verge of a public health crisis, end quote, and the city needed to start making sensible steps to curb the effects of STRs. We have a lot of people, our long-term community critical people, teachers, emergency responders, city staff, and others who need to be able to live here, said Ballman. Ballman suggested looking to other similar communities, like Fredericksburg, with outsized tourism issues, and taking a series of steps over time to address what he called the city's overabundance of STRs. One of the challenges that lay ahead for the city is determining exactly how many STRs there really are in Marfa. Companies like Airbnb and VRBO do not post addresses until a user books a stay, and not everyone complies with the city's ordinance to pay an STR registration fee. The city has previously hired outside firms to look into the matter and may do so again. For now, a precise number is hard to pin down. The Presidio County Appraisal District reports there are 118 STRs operating in Marfa, out of a total of 1,102 homes and 154 mobile homes. A third-party data collection agency that the city may contract with claims there could be up to 210 STRs in Marfa. It's kind of hard to pin it down, so we're going to have to just sort of combine all of those resources to get a number, said City Manager Mandy Roan. In addition to upping registration fees, council also directed Roan to look into what it would cost to conduct fire inspections for STRs. The city is currently working with its lawyers to edit its STR ordinance to reflect rate changes and a potential fire safety inspection requirement. Council agreed the steps were sensible and the start of more conversations moving forward. I know there's a very rich history here, as well as other municipalities all across the world, about dealing with short-term rentals, said Ballman. But it seems like the ones that have more restrictions and more guidance tend to empower their communities more than the ones that don't have anything. In a follow-up call, Ballman stated longer-term goals would involve looking into how to incentivize more long-term rentals and whether a potential moratorium could be placed on STRs in the city. We need to make sure that STR impacts are being mitigated and we need to hold them accountable, said Bauman. With planning and zoning, we're going to be looking at how we can limit the number of Airbnbs, VRBOs, and other short-term rentals by the block or neighborhood level. Illustration by Crow Crumbs. Despite skyrocketing property values, Tri-County Schools Struggle to Stay Afloat, by Mary Cantrell, M-K-C-A-N-T-R-E-L-L, with at BigBenSentinel.com. Tri-County. When the Marfa ISD School Board met in August to approve the 2022-23 budget, it was not without complaints over the nearly $1 million out of their $4.8 million budget the district is projected to pay back to the state under its recapture, or Robin Hood, policy. Marfa is considered a rich district based on property taxes and has excess wealth per pupil, therefore pays money back to the state out of their maintenance and operations, M&O, funds, which the state redistributes to property-poor districts. But a walk through the school campuses does not reveal a district saddled with excess wealth. Leaky roofs, inoperable water fountains, and smells of mold signal deteriorating facilities. There is a disconnect between the state's labeling of the district and the reality for those who attend it, said Superintendent Oscar Aguero. We're trying to do school in buildings that were built decades ago, yet we're falling under this rich district and having to pay money back. They're taking away money that we could use to fix things that would make school run a lot better, said Aguero. This isn't just the case in Marfa, Aguero said. It's a region-wide problem. From Marfa and from Fort Davis and a little bit of Alpine, they're literally taking the last pennies out of our pocket, he said. Recently, Marfa school board members voted to pull $50,000 out of their reserves for a new water heater and roof repairs to the gym and science wing. In Texas, the drivers of school funding are enrollment, property values, and tax collection. Marfa pays into recapture due to high property values and fewer children enrolled in the district. As our attendance was going down, our values skyrocketed, Aguero explained. Marfa's tourism boom has led to more secondary homeowners flooding the real estate market, causing property values to climb. Home valuations went up 65% this past year and have gone up 361% since 2014, according to the Presidio County Appraisal District, PCAD. Absentee homeowners snapping up sparsely available housing has led to a local affordable housing shortage, with many opting to operate highly profitable short-term rentals, STRs, in lieu of long-term rental agreements. The city's policies and regulations regarding STRs were a topic of discussion in recent council meetings. Read coverage of those events in this week's paper. The PCAD is aware of 118 STRs operating in the city of Marfa, which it says has a total of around 1,102 homes and 154 mobile homes. A third-party data collection agency, which is currently in discussions with the city, reported to city employees there could be up to 210 STRs in Marfa. But more home buyers does not necessarily equate to more full-time residents or students utilizing the school district. MISD is currently hovering at around 260 students enrolled, compared to the 80s and 90s, when the student population was around 700. Plus, many students never re-enrolled after the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, said Aguero, who estimated MISD lost around 50 kids during that time. The houses are selling, said Aguero, but when it's not bringing in a kid with it, it doesn't help. If we had one kid in every house, we'd still have 700 kids in our district. And student enrollment and attendance numbers are used to determine the amount of funding from the state. For small districts like Marfa, The addition of just 10 students, each bringing in the minimum state aid of $6,160 a year, could amount to a full salary for an additional teacher, for example. Chandra Villanueva, Economic Opportunity Program Director with Every Texan, an Austin-based nonprofit public policy organization which focuses on improving equity in education and workforce development, said Austin, too, is experiencing declining enrollment, skyrocketing housing prices, and hefty recapture payments. She anticipates school funding will be one of the major topics of discussion among lawmakers in the upcoming 2023 legislative session. Villanueva said declining enrollment is a serious issue for some districts because while a student body may be fewer, populations often don't drop enough to close a campus, causing costs per student to go up. It actually makes things more expensive, especially for rural districts, because instead of having 30 kids to a classroom, you have 15 or 20, but you still have to offer that grade, said Villanueva. At their fall budget meeting, school board members remarked on how state aid funneling into the school has declined over the years, now making up around $250,000, or roughly 5% of their overall budget. This year, the assistance of restricted one-time COVID relief funds helped the district pass a balanced budget. Public schools in Texas are funded from three primary sources: local school district property taxes, state funds, and federal funds. As property values in Texas have increased, the state has contributed less to public schools. As it stands, said Villanueva, recapture or Robin Hood is taking the blame for the larger issue of an inherently flawed public school funding formula. Villanueva authored a recent report on misconceptions of the state's controversial recapture policy, which states that while recapture has grown to a projected total of $3 billion in 2023, up from $1.2 billion in 2014, it makes up a small part, an estimated 6% in 2023, of overall school funding. If our schools were adequately funded, we wouldn't have the level of recapture we have, said Villanueva. It's easy to blame recapture because you see those dollars physically leaving your district, but it's harder to imagine what the funding levels should look like to begin with. The state currently contributes the minimum allotment of $6,160 per student annually, an increase that rose from $5,140 in 2019 after remaining stagnant for many years, and considers a host of factors when deciding how much money a school is entitled to, including geography, attendance, and percentages of economically disadvantaged and English as a Second Language, ESL, students. We have a school finance system that is multi-complex, said Dr. Doug Carr, who served as Presidio ISD superintendent from 2004 to 2007 and is now working as a consultant for districts in the Lubbock area. It's hard to make the Rotary Club understand in a 20-minute presentation. The school funding formula affects each district differently, but in Marfa, Aguero said the factors contributing to the formula and their overall funding, he'd like to change, are a higher basic allotment per student, more money for ESL learners and students with disabilities, as well as adjustments that account for inflation and rising property taxes. I'd love to see the finance system in the state of Texas go. Every district is not the same, so we can't have this one formula for every district, said Aguero. While the formula causes districts like Marfa to rely more on local property taxes and less on state aid to fund their campuses in order to pass bond projects, large-scale infrastructure initiatives, they must also rely on a school property tax increase. Marfa ISD recently put a $57 million bond on the ballot this November for the construction of a new K-12 campus. It's a decision that the school board argues is necessary, but may not garner enough public support to pass. At a meeting held in September, school board trustees said recent feedback from the community was overwhelmingly negative, with those against the bond citing financial concerns and inflation. One trustee said people were telling him it'll never pass. The bond, the subject of a series of community meetings this past summer, would, for example, increase school property taxes on a $200,000 home by a rate of $46.67 a month, or $560 annually over the course of 30 years. The district would raise its interest and sinking I&S tax rate to pay for the bond. Unlike the district's M&O pot, I&S funds are not subject to recapture, meaning the district would keep all of its bond dollars. A new K-12 campus would hold 300 students and address ongoing concerns over school security by housing all students under one roof, some board members argue. Bond monies would also go toward the construction of a new career and technology addition to the high school. Last November, Texas voters rejected the majority of school district bonds on the ballot for the first time in a decade, and this past May saw only a slight majority of bonds pass. Still, Aguero said, the district's current facilities are structured and rigid, reflecting educational values of the past and holding back contemporary instruction. Roomier station-based elementary classrooms and a newly outfitted Career and Technical Education, CTE, center that are a part of the bond would help bring Marfa's schools into the 21st century, he said. I always tell people we're training kids for jobs that haven't even been invented yet. Trying to do that in the system we're on right now is very difficult, said Aguero. Our buildings are designed for the old school, face this way, we're not leaving this room, methodologies. Marfa ISD isn't the only local district experiencing a similar hike in property values, coupled with declining enrollment. Fort Davis ISD is made up of around 181 students, is currently operating on a $3 million budget, which, due to less revenue, leaves them with a $620,000 deficit, and is projected to pay $20,000 in recapture this year. FDISD Superintendent Graydon Hicks said his district was in serious financial trouble and warned of a grim future for small rural districts should shares of state and federal aid continue to decrease. Like other small districts across the state, the numbers aren't working for us. It gives me no satisfaction to predict that within the next 2 to 4 years, upwards of 10 to 20% of our smaller districts, including Fort Davis, will be facing financial ruin, said Hicks in a recent letter to the editor. Alpine ISD Superintendent Dr. Michelle Reinhart said over the past 5 years, the district has seen a slight decline in enrollment, but saw an increase this year. Alpine ISD recently became a property-rich district and paid into Robin Hood for the first time last year. This year, they are expecting to pay around $18,000 in recapture. To illustrate what she called an unfair funding formula, Reinhart points to Rankin ISD, located 2 hours away from Alpine, which has a student population of 312, around one-third of Alpine's student population of 960, yet is operating on a much larger budget. There are still inequities in the funding formula that benefit these oil-rich or other property-rich districts that allow them to, even though they're sending a lot back, to keep more. If we were funded at the same per-pupil level, we would be looking at a $33 million budget versus an $11 million budget, said Reinhart. Aguero said unlike nearby Rankin, Wink, and Fort Stockton school districts, Tri-County districts are not bolstered by property taxes from profitable energy industries. And by and large, single-family homes are making up the most of the district's property tax collections. Rankin is estimated to pay $50 million in recapture this year, to which Aguero argues that truly is their excess. We don't have oil or gas or wind. Ours is truly the community paying this recapture, said Aguero. Jeff Davis County's Valentine ISD, which is considered a property-poor district and enrolls around 35 students, is projected to receive $1 million in state aid for 2022-23. Districts that do not pay into recapture receive state aid, but it is not explicitly stated how much comes from the state's collected recapture funds. Brewster County's Marathon ISD does not pay into recapture, but benefits from a sparsity adjustment in the Texas Education Code due to the fact that it offers a K-12 school, is 30 miles away from the nearest school district, and has less than 130 students. Those factors allow them to receive a base allotment of 130 students enrolled, even though their actual enrollment is closer to 55 to 60 students. Funding at our actual student enrollment ADA, average daily attendance, of 55 to 60 students would not provide sufficient funding to meet our student or district needs, which is why we closely monitor the sparsity adjustment funding during each legislative session to see if it is being discussed, and if so, how proposed changes would impact our state revenues, said Victoria Sanchez, Marathon ISD business manager. In 2019, the legislature passed House Bill 3, which was designed to reduce districts' recapture payments, cut taxes, and provide more money for public schools. Villanueva said while the bill increased basic allotment per student, the move covered 1 year of inflation and has since remained stagnant. They did some tweaks around the edges that were good for 1 year, but it's not keeping pace with the changing costs, teacher salaries, and the cost of living, said Villanueva. Attracting teachers to a rural area where salaries are lower and housing is sparse is a challenge facing many districts. Marfa, just this year, is able to offer $1,500 over the state minimum teacher salary. Marfa ISD owns 7 rental properties, 6 of which are currently rented to teachers, but Aguero said what the district really needs is the construction of a 20-unit apartment complex with affordable units that families and teachers could move into. Villanueva said it's time to start thinking more holistically about what it costs to sustain education systems in different parts of the state and factor in housing. It costs more to live in Marfa than it does in some of those surrounding communities, and so it's harder to attract and retain teachers because if they can't pay rent or buy a house, because everybody's coming from outside and driving up real estate costs, how are you going to keep teachers? You should have a mechanism that directs more money for teacher salaries, said Villanueva. The student population of Marfa ISD is considered 78% economically disadvantaged and is around 95% Hispanic, but Marfa's ESL population, a consideration which brings in more governmental support, is only around 18%, said Aguero. Most families immigrating from Mexico opt to stay in Presidio or head up to Fort Stockton, where homes are cheaper and there are more job opportunities. Aguero and Carr said, for the most part, people utilizing the school district are old Marfa families who have been here for generations. What you're basically left with at the school is pretty much the same kind of population of kids that the Marfa community has always had. It's people who live there and work there. They work for ranchers. They work for the tomato farms out between Marfa and Fort Davis, said Carr. It's not your folks out of Santa Fe, New Mexico, that come down with a pocket full of money. But whether or not future generations of those longtime families can afford to live, work, and continue to send their kids to Marfa ISD is up for debate. School bonds, because they are paid off over time. In Marfa's case, the $57 million bond would be paid off over 30 years, are considered to be generationally equitable, spreading out the burden of paying for a new school among generations who will use it. While it might seem like an influx of money and property wealth driven by arts and culture tourism would simply benefit the town, similar to the local housing and workforce shortages, the impacts the tourism industry has had on Marfa are complicated, said Carr. We can pack the town on Labor Day weekend with all of the tourism that you want to pack the town with. The bottom line is, it doesn't help the school one iota when they open back up on Tuesday morning after Labor Day. It's just a disconnect between what really drives Marfa and what drives the school system in terms of funding, said Carr. Agueto said, financially speaking, Marfa's tourism economy doesn't positively impact the school district. But local nonprofits and other entities like the Chinati Foundation and Marfa Live Arts, which give back to the school in terms of programming and donated time, do. Our kids get to put pieces of art in Chinati when they're in sixth grade. Our kids get to see their own plays presented and made into real life. Prior to COVID, our kids were shooting rockets with Blue Origin, said Agueto. They were doing things that you didn't get to do in other places, but you don't see that on the finance side. It is worth noting that hotels, Cibolo Creek Ranch, Hotel St. George, and Hotel Paisano are among Marfa ISD's largest taxpayers. Marfa ISD brought in $4.9 million in property taxes last year and is projected to bring in $5.6 million in 2022-23, according to Agueto. Marfa ISD's taxable jurisdiction makes up the majority of Presidio County, with Presidio ISD's jurisdiction consisting of a strip of land along the border. Students in Redford, for example, are technically zoned to go to Marfa schools, despite being located only 20 minutes away from Presidio. Agueto said, on average, Marfa ISD pays tuition to send around 20 kids a year to be educated in Presidio, an effort that costs them around $70,000 to $80,000. Agueto has looked into the possibility of redrawing the district lines to give more land to Presidio ISD in order to lower Marfa's recapture payments, he said. While Marfa ISD is property rich, has a small student body, and is largely reliant on property tax revenue for their annual budget, Presidio ISD is property poor, has a large student population, and is dependent on state and federal funding, said Carr. Last school year, Presidio ISD received around $9.5 million in state aid. You could not have two more diametrically opposed school districts than you've got on the north end and the south end of Presidio County, said Carr. Presidio ISD is becoming wealthier by the day, but even in spite of that, Presidio is still dependent to the tune of about 80% on state aid for their existence. While the majority of Marfa ISD's taxable jurisdiction is Presidio County ranch land, area ranches, due to significant agricultural exemptions, contribute less money into the district than single-family homes. According to the PCAD, area ranch land totals around $12 million in net taxable value, compared to $214 million taxable value for single-family homes. School district property value studies, which are conducted annually by the State Comptroller's Office, determine the taxable value of property within a school district. School districts failed the study if they are not 95% or more in line with the state's determined taxable values, something that can happen if appraised values are lower than what properties are really selling for. Recapture payments districts make are based on taxes that are actually brought in. This past year, Marfa ISD passed its property value study, but Presidio ISD failed. The PCAD recently got a letter from the state comptroller notifying them that they have been identified as a targeted district and will be more closely monitored due to failing too many property value studies within the past 3 years. Alpine ISD also failed its property value study this year. Reinhardt said the discrepancy amounted to $600,000 the school district did not receive in funds. That's money we don't have that we are entitled to in the state's funding formula that we don't receive in order to educate kids, said Reinhardt. The school finance area is very complex, but if we could address some of these discrepancies in multiple areas, we're talking about big shifts that could result in us receiving the amount of funding that we need. Each legislative session, Aguero works with the Texas Association of School Administrators to speak to state representatives and senators, which he plans to continue to do for the coming session, but said as a small rural district, it can be hard to get any real attention. Reinhardt, too, plans to get involved and advocate for Alpine ISD on the legislative level, and said rural districts might band together to be more effective moving forward. I do believe that it's easier for many reasons for the legislature to hear from superintendents that are based geographically closer to Austin, but we have totally different challenges out here, said Reinhardt. We don't have a lot of the same social capital or political clout that exists in other districts. Villanueva said she is concerned over state surplus-driven tax cuts, school vouchers, which would allow state funding to be used for private school tuition, and an overall climate in state leadership, which she said is extremely hostile to education. There's been almost zero discussion about increasing school funding or addressing the gaps in school funding, said Villanueva. All they want to talk about is decreasing tax rates even further. Senator Cesar Blanco, who represents Marfa, said he intends to fight back against private school vouchers and advocate for more incentives for teachers in rural communities, an increase in the basic allotment per student, and for the inclusion of a formula adjustment to meet the unique needs of rural school districts. He said he intends to help find a way to prioritize both tax cuts and public education. The best way to provide real and lasting property tax relief is to increase the state's share of public school funding to over 50%, said Blanco in a statement to the Big Bend Sentinel. With a surplus of $27 billion next session, we have a golden opportunity to make big and bold investments in our kids, schools, and communities. For Aguero, discussions over school funding hinge on an important question. What is the minimum a school should have? With well-off neighboring districts offering agricultural programs, nursing, and a barbecue competition team, in the recent past, Marfa ISD has cut Montessori and band programs over funding concerns. He said Marfa ISD would like to expand on its existing CTE programs of welding and robotics, but is stymied by dysfunctional facilities. We're trying to push some IT things because that's a lot of direction that people are going, some STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. But how do you provide all that but yet are losing money in the system? Said Aguero.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, October 6th, 2022. Rental car business brings new commodity to the city. By Sean Yorks. Fort Stockton is the perfect fit for the folks at Small Town Car Rental, and Small Town Car Rental is the perfect fit for Fort Stockton. The city has lacked affordable car rental options for years, and Small Town Car Rental owner Matt Green saw a need. The Fort Stockton location on Dickinson Boulevard opened Monday, October 3rd, and Green and General Manager Johnny Reese are excited to serve the Fort Stockton community. "We'd been looking at Fort Stockton for about 6 months," he said, adding that the location and lack of rental car services was a driving force in opening here. "The size of the town, the type of businesses that are here, it's a good fit for us. Their slogan is Big City Convenience, Small Town Values. These are the type of towns we like to operate in. They are underserved for rental cars." Green said the response from the community has been positive, with the Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Director recognizing the need for such a service in Fort Stockton. "They know the town needs rental cars. They've tried to get them here for years. None of the big rental cars companies wanted to open in a market like this. They were very positive." Green noted that the insurance companies, body shops, car dealerships, and hotels have had a positive response because in the past, Midland and Odessa were the closest options for a rental car. "Once contacted by a customer or insurance company, Small Town Car Rental will take care of the rest. It's like the beacon of light for this area, for sure. People break down on the freeway. People in town need a car. This is a great idea for a business here." With locations in Eastland, Graham, and now Fort Stockton, Small Town Car Rental can serve any rental car needs. Call the Fort Stockton location at 244-4454 or visit smalltowncarrental.com. They offer online booking and work with all insurance companies. York's returns to Pioneer after 9 years. The Fort Stockton Pioneer welcomed Sean Yorks back to town this week after a previous stint with the paper 9 years ago. He is a Florida native with 30 years of newspaper experience who worked for the Pioneer in 2013 as the managing editor under publisher Pam Palaleo. Yorks has taken on the role of editor under managing editor Nathan Hewer. "Sean will be a tremendous asset to our people. I look forward to having a full-time editorial person at my side for the first time since my arrival in August of 2020. Sean will enable us to expand our coverage and continue to improve the quality of the Pioneer on a weekly basis." After leaving Fort Stockton in the fall of 2013, Sean returned to Guymon, Oklahoma, where he spent 7 years as the sports editor and photographer. Sean then spent 2 years as a reporter at the weekly newspaper in Central Florida, and spent the last 6 months as the editor of the twice-weekly Dalhart Texan in the Northwest Texas Panhandle. "I'm excited to be back in Fort Stockton, which is a place I enjoyed working years ago. I look forward to getting established in the community again." Sean has family in the Dallas-Fort Worth metropolitan area, Guymon, and Liberal, Kansas. Fort Stockton ISD to add eSports team at high school, by Nathan Hewer. The Fort Stockton Independent School District will soon have an eSports team in place at the high school for the first time in school history. FSISD Superintendent Dr. Gabriel revealed the news at the district's regular board meeting on September 28th, stating that Assistant Superintendent Roy Alvarado will be the coordinator of the new venture. "We have to be at the forefront of what the future holds," Zamora explained. "There are students who may find this the most fascinating and interesting of the possible UIL events. We want to give them the opportunity to compete. The eSports team will be held to same academic standards as the rest of the ISD teams are held to. The no pass, no play policy will apply to all students on the eSports team." For Alvarado, the first step in forming a team at the high school level was gauging interest in students via a survey and finding a coach with knowledge in the gaming realm. The assistant superintendent noted that nearly 100 students out of approximately 700 showed interest in potentially joining the team. "Based on the interest, we're going to follow up with the students with interview-type questions. Having interest is one thing, competing is another," Alvarado said when explaining his thought process when deciding the size of the team. "Of the students that responded to the survey, over 75% of them have watched competitive esports. Also, they expressed interest in actual competing. Team members will compete with Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch consoles," according to Alvarado. Vanta, a youth development platform that became the official esports sponsor of the UIL in July of this year, will provide the avenue for Fort Stockton to compete at no cost to the district. Games that Vanta approved and the Fort Stockton ISD is considering for students to play in competitions are Fortnite, Rocket League, League of Legends, Apex Legends, Valorant, Super Smash Bros., Ultimate, Mario Kart 8, and chess. Alvarado noted that his expectations is to have competing by the end of the month, which will allow students to participate in the fall season. I'm hoping to have them sign on and registered so that they can compete by the end of the month. The window is still open for us to join the league for this season. There's a fall and spring season. We're delayed. However, they will still allow us to participate. The Fort Stockton ISD will begin their esports venture with only a team at the high school level. Alvarado explained that the esports team will eventually be formed at the middle school following the initial implementation with older students. That'll be next. As soon as we get this kicked off here at the high school, we're going to learn from that, and we should be better off to get the middle school going. Your guide to local places to go and things to do. Cinema Week will take place at Panther Pictures in Fort Stockton from October the 7th through the 13th. Unlimited popcorn will be featured during the week-long event. The Fort Stockton volleyball team will host their first district home match of the season when they take on Andrews at noon on Saturday, October 8th. Stockton Market will take place at Zero Stone Park in Fort Stockton on Saturday, October 8th from noon to 4 p.m.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, September 29th. Commissioners green light contracts for new park. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward County Commissioners approved a bid on fencing for the dog park inside the Ward County Event Center Park from Odessa Fence Incorporated during the regular Monday morning meeting. The bid submitted includes material, labor, and supervision to install 269 linear feet of 4-foot-high black vinyl-coated chain link with 2 walk gates and 54 linear feet of decorative metal panels around the dog park at a cost of $41,000. Also approved was a bid from Aldridge Gardens for concrete and landscaping. The concrete was submitted at $305,000, and the landscaping, also submitted by Aldridge Gardens, includes trees, various plants, sprinklers, water lines, and more for $557,000. Both bids were accepted and approved. Work is slated to begin within 15 days of awarding the contract. Commissioners also accepted a $30,000 donation check from Cross Your Heart Ministries Incorporated. Quote, "The donation was specified for furniture, fixtures, and equipment at the Ward County Event Center Park," Ward County Judge Greg Holly said. Cross Your Heart Ministries is a private nonprofit organization based in Monahans who declined to share any information about their organization and/or purpose with the news. The court also approved contracts for secure and non-secure placement of juveniles together with other professional services. Quote, "Placement of juveniles by the court can be for pretrial detention, which is short-term, or for longer periods of time after trial or probation violations," Judge Holly said. "Judge Swanson and I tried to work with the juveniles, parents, and court procedures in all possible ways and used placement as a final solution," end quote. The contracts are for daily care at the approved facilities, with a preference for Midland County and Lubbock County. Cost per juvenile offender per day ranges from $140 at the secure Midland County facility upward to as much as $145 a day at the Lubbock County secure facility. Also included in the juvenile contract approval, counseling services with ChoiceWorks George Gomez, who is in Monahans one day a week for 4 counseling sessions at a contract cost of $1,300 plus mileage. Present for Monday's meeting were Ward County Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms, and Ward County Judge Greg Holly. The next regularly scheduled Commissioner's meeting will be October 10th at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen Street. Council approves tax rate. Cutbirth appointed as new airport FBO manager. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting in regular session on Tuesday afternoon, Monahan City Council approved the second and final reading of the property tax rate ordinance for the 2022 tax year. Council approved the ad valorem tax rate, and it will remain at 35 cents per $100 of valuation, the same as last year. Even though the tax rate is the same, an increase in property values will produce $234,000 more than last year. The assessed valuation, according to the published budget, is $513 million, up from $446 million last year. The tax rate will produce an estimated tax levy of $1.79 million. The new rate will be effective on October 1st. Present for the meeting were City Manager Rex Thee and Mayor Adam Steen, along with council members Rudy Hernandez, Ivy Valenzuela, Richard Hawkins, Calvin Carroll, and Jeppy Wilson. In other business, council members accepted the termination of contract of the current Roy Hurd Memorial Airport Fixed Base Operator, FBO manager, Brett Gregory, and agreed to appoint John Cutbirth as the new airport FBO manager. A fixed base operator, FBO, is an organization or person granted the right by an airport to operate at the airport and provide aeronautical services such as fueling, hangaring, tie-down and parking, aircraft rental, aircraft maintenance, flight instruction, and similar services. Gregory has served as the FBO manager since January 2020 and submitted his resignation to the city manager on September 7th, saying, quote, "I am not spending much of my time in Monahans due to circumstances beyond my control, and I will not be able to give the airport the attention it deserves," end quote. Gregory added that with the city's support, he was proud of the work and accomplishments achieved at the airport. The termination of the contract was accepted. In the very next agenda item, council members accepted a new contract and appointed Cutbirth as the new FBO manager. Quote, "John Cutbirth has family members involved in the airport. He is very versed in what goes on out there. He also has spent some good time with Brett looking things over and made the decision to apply for the appointment. The Airport Advisory Board did accept Gregory's resignation and did recommend the appointment of Cutbirth for the position," Thee said. Cutbirth will be paid $1,000 per month temporary management fee and is permitted to profit from the sale of certain products and services. Quote, "The three-year contract is basically the same contract as Gregory's, stating Cutbirth will be responsible for all maintenance, and he will carry public liability insurance in a minimum of $2 million per occurrence and $5 million aggregate," he added. The next city council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, October 11th, in council chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. Hospital suffering a staff shortage. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The hospital is back to searching for a new chief of nursing officer after the Ward County Hospital Board of Managers had approved a replacement hire at the September 8th meeting. Approved as a replacement for Ian Ray, who had to move back to San Angelo for personal reasons, was Norma Terran. She was hired to take over the position on Monday, September 19th. Terran called Ward Memorial Hospital Administrator and CEO Leticia Rodriguez on Friday, September 16th, to say she could not take the job after all. Quote, Ian Ray was the best well-rendered CNO I have ever worked with. He impacted so much good change while he was here. I hated to see him go. He was a great asset to the hospital, Rodriguez said. Norma Terran was ready to go and excited about working here. She had come out twice and was planning to move here. Then I got a message from her late Friday evening saying she and her husband of 20 years were getting a divorce and it was going to prevent her from moving here, Rodriguez said. Rodriguez told the board of managers it is hard to get qualified help and other staff members are having to double up on the workload concerning organization of shifts and other work areas along with their own regular duties. Quote, it is a very competitive market, and it's hard to get nurses, hard to get office help or maintenance help because of better pay elsewhere. We had 4 candidates scheduled to interview with our business manager. None of them showed up. We had hired a candidate. She showed up, left for lunch, and didn't come back. We had another one hired in the business office. She called in, and that just never showed up at all, Rodriguez said. According to Rodriguez, at the last Texas Organization of Rural Community Hospitals conference, being able to hire qualified help is a growing problem for all rural hospitals who can't compete with the pay scale of large hospital entities. Ward County Hospital Board managers present for this meeting were Lisa Stewart, Angel Fuentes, Gerald Carlson, John Fawcett, Mickey Mitchell, Jeff Burdick, Larry Hunt, and Administrator CEO Leticia Rodriguez. The next regularly scheduled WCH board meeting will be on October 6th at 6:15 in the Ward County Hospital Physical Therapy Boardroom, 420 South Ike Street. Local chiropractor jailed Tuesday. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man is behind bars accused of firing a gun during a verbal altercation with his wife early Tuesday morning. Around 2:24 a.m., Monahans police officers were called to the 1300 block of Dwight in reference to a disturbance involving a firearm. According to Monahans Police Department CID Lieutenant Jeremy Kynes, quote, while en route to the call, officers received information from dispatch stating a firearm had been discharged inside the home, end quote. Through further investigation, officers learned the suspect, identified as Dr. Jason Morgan, age 46, of 1301 South Dwight Street, had been in a verbal altercation with his wife and fired the weapon, although it wasn't clear what Morgan shot at or if it was intentional. Prior to officers' arrival, family members were able to disarm Morgan, Kynes added. Morgan was subsequently placed into custody without further incident and taken to Ward County Jail. He was charged with aggravated assault family violence with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. Morgan's bond was posted at $10,000. He posted the bond and was released later on Tuesday. If convicted, the offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 20 years or less than 2 years, and a fine not to exceed $10,000.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.